Well, g'day and welcome back. We're on for another episode of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Meats and Livestock Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian livestock industry to help the sector manage market and price volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives, such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps, may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. There's been some big moves in the markets since the last episode. I think weather underlying all of this has been the real driver of that sharp rally we've seen in the past fortnight. Obviously, the rain right across the eastern seaboard, you know, stretching from southeast South Australia right into central Queensland, has been really welcomed, obviously, by the market and the producer particularly, and that's really supported price performance. We'll get into that this week, but I think the three things I want to look at and cover off, obviously how the markets are performing currently. I'll look at what, if any, influence the announcement out of the Trump administration last weekend of a reduction basically for Australian beef exports and that 10% tariff, what it actually means. And finally, the wash up of the numbers from the Australian Bureau of Statistics quarter three slaughter and production data. I'll start with the current markets though. At a restocker level, as I mentioned to kick off, obviously the rain has been that major driver of injecting confidence back into the producer level. And we've really seen that, you know, in a really swift reaction, lifting demand at a producer level for light cattle to be traded and backgrounded. And I think on that point of light cattle, this is probably more so relevant to the South, but, you know, as those producers look to get back on their feet following drought and repair their budgets and repair the financials of their business, would not surprise me to see a fair bit more trading occur just initially to get going again. I think that's probably a theme to be expected, and underlying that, we'll really get a good sense of it. And I mentioned it in the last episode, but we'll get a really good sense of it at the wiener sales as they kick off over the next few weeks of what that looks like and the engagement and buying behavior of those, you know, those regions in the South chasing cattle. But moving, you know, beyond the South and the confidence that's injected, it's very much similar, you know, in the North. Queensland had some really good falls, you know, anywhere from sort of 25 to 100 to 150 mils right across sort of southern and central Queensland over the past week. And that's been really supportive, obviously, of demand. The other aspect sort of underpinning all of that and that demand in the North is that subsoil moisture that those cattle regions still have. You know, their subsoil moisture, I had a look at it, only as recent as today, the moisture is there in that sort of deep, not root zone level, but deep zone level, sort of anywhere from below 1 meter right through to 6 meters. And obviously with the rain that's come through more recently, that's topping up that water table and you know, really soil moisture profile more so than anything. And that grass growth and production is then reacting as a result of that. You know, it's the time of year for those regions to receive rain. And I think, you know, we're really seeing that shift following this rain and reaction in price performance. Light steers this week across Roma and Dalby nearing $6. I know that there are deals being done for paddock cattle in Queensland well above $6. It does show you that the confidence is there. And again, it just really reinforces the fact that rain can play a major role in that confidence and movements in the market. Feeders and slaughter cattle, both on similar sort of strains here in terms of what's driving it. But this recent rain has really shortened up availability of supply, particularly direct cattle for both slaughter and feeders. And what that's done is really forced the feedlots and processors to lift their grids to secure stock. Particularly relevant in the crossbred space in Queensland, we've seen a really strong lift, you know, 20 to 30 cents in that market in the past fortnight alone. And that's all, you know, been in reaction to rain because that rain has come. On the Angus front for feeders, it's an interesting dynamic whereby we're seeing obviously strong availability of supply of Angus feeder cattle, but then with this recent rain appearing, it's sort of tempered that supply a little bit. So the demand has picked up a touch in the sense that prices have found a bit of support on the back of the rain. I think what we will see, or what I believe we may see over the next month, you know, I've spoken a lot about this spread between Angus and crossbred feeders. In a somewhat unique sense, we may see crossbred prices rally to actually match Angus rather than Angus prices soften. And I think when we consider what I was just mentioning around, you know, that really sharp retraction in availability of crossbred cattle, that's going to add to that improvement in price. The other aspect to it is Queenslanders at this time of year, when they do get that rain and those cattle are sort of teetering on the edge of meeting, you know, meeting weight or reaching weight for grid specs, it wouldn't surprise me to see those stock held back and be marketed in early Q1 of next year. Not dissimilar to what we've seen the past two seasons and that crossover of ending one year and starting the next and a big wedge of cattle and a flow of cattle coming in the first, you know, couple of months of say 2026 because those stock have been held back. That wouldn't surprise me. And I think as a result of that, you'll see those crossbred rates pick up and that will actually narrow the spread this year rather than where we are now when it's sitting at around 20 cents, the Angus price continuing to narrow. You might see that crossbred rate pick up. On the slaughter cattle front, supply very, very short, particularly in the south, you know, unsurprising really with the rain. Obviously, those producers are now positioning themselves and getting set up for a potential rebuild and restock. Looking at those soil moisture maps I mentioned a moment ago, performance in the last month or even year to date in November, and the availability of moisture in those sort of southern and southwestern regions of the southeast, really, really positive. And that improvement in seasonal conditions, shortened up supply and really driven an uptick in market price. At a sale yard level, weight and condition is really driving price performance at the minute. There's a really large discrepancy between sort of your middleweight boner cows and well-finished heavy cows. And those processors are chasing those cattle that have got weight and condition and obviously yield in sale yard markets. On the direct front, as I mentioned, very similar to feedlots, those space bookings for processors have just disappeared. And as a reaction, the processors have really got to pick up their game to actually access stock as we move into the last sort of realistically 3 to 4 full weeks of processing before they that part of the industry starts to wind down for Christmas and the break over New Year's. Moving on to tariffs, obviously the announcement on the weekend, Saturday morning or Friday night Australian time out of the Trump administration, that in response to cost of living pressures for American consumers with beef, they'd reduce the tariff rates on beef imported into America. Australia, obviously a winner out of that outcome with our 10% rate reduced to zero. Do remember that's only for beef. So our exports of goat, mutton and lamb into America remain at 10%. So this was just a beef specific outcome. What is important about this situation though, which, you know, yes, I would call it bullish for the market that this has been reduced, but I don't necessarily think that it's that important. The US were going to buy our beef anyway, whether we had 10% or not. What is important is where the Brazil rate ends up. So with that reduction of 10%, but including the 40% that was placed on them in August plus the 26.4%, which is the out of quota tariff that they began realizing from sort of week three in January, because they filled that other country quota so quickly, that still leaves Brazil exports or imports into the US at 66.4% when you include that out of quota rate. That's what's more important here in this situation necessarily than Australia going to zero. So any potential future discussions between the Brazilian and American administrations on reducing that 40% rate has a much bigger influence on Australia and our performance globally, and obviously most importantly into America, because of the scale and size of that market at the minute, is those outcomes of the Brazilian tariff or any future reduction on the rate they have standing. That's a key one to consider. The 10% dropping to zero doesn't really make any difference. As I say, the Yanks want our product. We know that's true. And that, you know, isn't as much of an influence for us and ultimately longer term outcomes for us than what that dynamic is with Brazil. Brazil will produce a lot more product than we do at a lot cheaper rate. And we compete head on with them in America, particularly in product and, you know, meats like trim. That dynamic is more important. To wrap us up, the ABS released their Q3 slaughter and production numbers on Tuesday. Really big release of data. Gives us a really solid backwards looking view of, you know, where things are at in the industry, and they're really important metrics to keep an eye on. But for me, it's just reaffirmed my beliefs and views around where I see we're at presently and where we're heading. But I suppose the two key aspects that I took away from it was firstly the fact that the cattle cycle is nearing its cyclical highs in slaughter and production. The data reaffirmed that, you know, slaughter numbers to their highest level since 1978. And when you look at the previous three cycles of the period between the bottom in the sense of lower slaughter numbers and production to the highest, which was 2011 to 14, 14 to 17, and then 17 to 19, we're in that same sort of period in terms of it's been 3.5 year timeline in each of those previous examples between 2022 and 25. We are at that 3.5 year period. So I think we've got a little bit longer to run in terms of the peak of the cycle, mainly because of the growth in the herd. We've had that, you know, five successive above average seasons for the major cattle regions in the country. I think we will have and see it run a bit longer. I think the other aspect to why that's the case is the really significant supply chain transformation we've seen, where the previous iterations of that 3.5 year period between the lows in slaughter and production to the highs is now more than ever we are focused on feeder steer production as an industry within the supply chain. The other examples, particularly the 2011 to 14 cycle, much heavier focused on bullock, grass-fed bullock production. And the reason why I say I think it'll run a bit longer is because we can run more cows, that's going to stretch out and elongate the availability of feeder cattle well into 27, particularly because this year has been favourable for, you know, the major cow producing regions in Queensland and the north in general. On, you know, that cycle reaching its peak, as I mentioned, slaughter the highest since Q3 1978, nearly 50 years. It was 2.48 million head. When you compare that figure and then include Q1 and Q2, so year-to-date numbers or year-to Q3 25 volumes, we were up on 2024 numbers by 13% or 814,000 head. So a really sharp lift there, as you can see, relative to last year's performance when we killed 8.3 million. So it gives you an idea of, you know, how solid the supply and availability of cattle are. The other point to mention about Q3 is it is the seasonal peak in supply within a year. So Q4 numbers will soften naturally because of the end of the year and things like that. But just generally, I think what it does tell us is that five successive seasons of rebuild, which has turned into growth of the cattle herd, is really coming home to roost in terms of, you know, the numbers we're seeing and supply availability come forward. I mentioned higher slaughter since 78. The other way you can look at it, which is to me probably even more interesting, is we've gone from 38-year lows in slaughter numbers in 2022 to 47-year highs as of Q3 2025 within 3.5 years. You know, it shows how significant the recovery has been in the processing sector to obviously, you know, manage and follow the rise in availability of slaughter cattle, coupled with the fact of, you know, and that growth in the herd. The last aspect to that cattle cycle, but not necessarily entirely related, it is a little bit, I suppose, and I've mentioned it already, but another interesting one was female kill at a quarterly level was the highest since, or the strongest quarter since 1977. So stronger again than the 2019 liquidation, which was pretty harsh, and also the 14-15 period at a quarterly level. We killed over 1.3 million females in Q3. I mentioned it with the bullocks just then, but again, I think it's evidence of this structural shift in the beef supply chain towards a focus on feeder production and targeting the feedlot market as a producer, which allows you to carry more cows. Couple that, particularly in Northern Australia, and I've mentioned it a fair bit on this podcast, is that improvement in carrying capacity through opening up land or increasing water points, which improves carrying capacity for the north, and the focus on the feeder market, allowing us to turn off cattle quicker so we can carry more cows. That to me points more towards an increase in the cow slaughter necessarily than a broad widespread liquidation. Yes, the south has gone through liquidation, but it's not where the bulk of the cattle are. I wouldn't read into this statistic about the female kill as widespread liquidation. I mentioned it for the reason to highlight that shift in the structure of the supply chain towards feedlots rather than any consideration towards widespread liquidation. The last one, which I think is really important, and with the long-range weather forecasts indicating it, a move of drier conditions into eastern Australia, I do believe it's something we need to monitor. And if those forecasts were to eventuate, it would become probably a more prominent issue that's discussed within the beef industry next year and beyond. And that's the issue of slaughter capacity. So collectively, New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria account for 90% of the total cattle slaughter in Australia per annum. As of Q3 25, those three states were operating at 100% capacity, those processing facilities, when you compare it to 10-year throughput performance. But Queensland and the major cattle regions of the country aren't in drought or any widespread sort of destock or liquidation part of their cattle cycle. That is ultimately the issue right there. So the processors are operating at capacity, but the major cattle regions aren't in drought. And obviously drought induces turnoff and sort of hurried up marketing campaign of cattle because the producer doesn't have the stock to feed them. I think processors are obviously well aware of this, and I'm sure a lot of them are well down the track of looking at adding additional shifts. Some of which we know already have, and I'm sure others are planning or intending on doing so moving forwards. But it's that combination of the cattle herd being at, you know, 20-year plus highs, record numbers of cattle on feed, and the processors are already at capacity, which is where I see issues. And what I mean by that is, you know, we've seen producers react to weather collectively, either forecast or actual seasonal conditions and changes, very, very swiftly. And there can be a sharp uptick in supply on the back of a change in seasonal conditions. And if 2026 is to sort of play out, or at least, you know, the first half of it by looking at a drying trend, that pressure it can place on the supply chain can pressure price performance as processors look to, you know, obviously manage the supply available to them, but also try and sort of push supply back a bit. I think it's something that the marketplace is sort of presented with as a challenge, and it is a situation to just note that capacity is, you know, those processes are working at capacity at the minute. That's all for this week. But next time I'm going to jump into the recently released quarter four MLA alpha feedlot brief, and then couple that with obviously the data released from ABS this week. It'll tell a really interesting story about grain fed turnoff, grain fed production as a share of the total. But I am going to dedicate a fair chunk of the next episode to answering some questions that I've had from some listeners, which I've been holding on to. The next episode is the second last episode of 2025. So if you do have questions, get them to me between now and next Thursday, the 4th of December. Would really love to hear from you. If you've been holding on to a couple or one that you want to ask, get in touch with me. Send me an email to ripley.atkinson@stonex.com or record a voice note of yourself on your phone, where you're from, the question, and I'll get to answering it in the next episode. Remember to share this with your mates or give it a review and follow it on the listening platform. Otherwise, thank you for listening. Until next time, take care. We'll see you then. Cheers.